The Journal is a new podcast from Gimlet Media and The Wall Street Journal about money, business, and power.
On this show, we show you how a company's bottom line affects the decisions you make every day.
Google's entire future is predicated on it continuing to be the one place you go for the answer to all information.
We follow the money and see where it takes us.
This is one of the biggest financial heists that has ever happened, period.
The Journal is out now.
On Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sponsored by Merrill and LinkedIn.
Here's your money briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Spreading your car payments over 6 or 7 years as opposed to a typical 3 or 4 years may sound like a good idea. But in a moment, a Wall Street Journal finance reporter will come by and explain why going that route could put you on the highway of sticker shock. First, some money and market news you should know. U.S. consumers spend more on groceries than they do at restaurants on average per year, and that's got the attention of restaurant delivery companies DoorDash and Postmates. They're expanding beyond restaurants and working with grocery and drug stores to boost their revenue. Postmates announced on Wednesday it'll soon start making deliveries from about 200 Walgreens and Duane Reade drug stores in New York, with an eye on expanding deliveries from those chains nationwide. Postmates already makes deliveries from Walmart stores, as does DoorDash. But they'll face plenty of competition from the likes of Amazon, Instacart, Fresh Direct, and Peapod. Now, while grocery delivery is growing, it's not without some kinks in the system. Many customers have reported problems with ordering online and with delivery. And a recent survey shows more than half of shoppers don't buy groceries online because they feel they'd be less expensive if they buy in the store. But some companies like Grubhub have decided to keep their focus on restaurant delivery and not expand to groceries. The labor market remains strong, but if you're looking for a U.S. city with both robust job and salary growth, Atlanta turns up on both lists. The latest job market report from Glassdoor Research shows that while pay is rising nationally at about 2% annually, it's rising at a 3% clip in Atlanta. San Francisco and Boston also top the list for pay growth. And San Francisco and Boston join Atlanta, touting the largest percentage increase in job openings over 2018. And around the country, the top three industries with the fastest growth in job openings in September were government, accounting and legal, and restaurants and bars.
The Journal is a new podcast from Gimlet Media and The Wall Street Journal about money, business, and power.
On this show, we show you how a company's bottom line affects the decisions you make every day.
Google's entire future is predicated on it continuing to be the one place you go for the answer to all information.
We follow the money and see where it takes us.
This is one of the biggest financial heists that has ever happened, period.
The Journal is out now.
On Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sponsored by Merrill and LinkedIn.
Car prices have outpaced incomes for the past decade, but that hasn't stopped Americans from buying expensive cars and pushing U.S. vehicle sales to record levels. How? Car loans extended to 6 years, and in many cases longer than that. Easy enough? Not quite. Let's bring in Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Eisen to explain. So Ben, traditional car loans were anywhere from 3 to 5 years, and while extending the life of the loan means spreading the payments out across more years, in a lot of cases, that just creates an illusion of affordability.
Definitely. When people walk into a car dealership, they often think that they can afford the car if they can afford the monthly payment. And the salesman or the finance manager might tell you that your monthly payment is only going to be $400, but it turns out you're making it over a much longer period of time. And a lot of people are very willing to take this deal, and they take out a longer car loan, and they're just making payments for a much longer period of time, eventually paying a lot more in total.
And it's hard to avoid the need for consumers to spread out their loans. More sophisticated multimedia displays in cars, the dominance of SUVs on car lots, that's really pushed car prices higher by a lot.
Definitely. When you look at cars, they're safer, they're more reliable, they're more technologically advanced. Most people are happy to have all of those things. But at the same time, it really has increased the cost of a car. A new car is almost $40,000 on average now when you look at the average transaction price. And then on top of that, you have people really having an eye for more expensive stuff. There's tons of add-ons that you can get on your car, and people like big pickup trucks and SUVs. So you have all of that, but at the same time, you have incomes that have not risen to match. So this discrepancy has formed, and basically that's getting filled with debt.
What's the impact here on the middle class? It seems like consumers are living beyond their means under the guise of, hey, look, I was able to buy a fancy car.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that we've been reporting on here at the Journal for the whole year is just this idea that it is tougher to be in the middle class these days. Incomes may be rising for the top 1% very rapidly, but they are not for the middle class. And just hanging on to what's considered a middle class lifestyle, buying a Honda Accord new at the dealership is just a lot more difficult than it used to be. And when we look at what's happening at the auto dealership, it really provides a window into how people are using debt in order to kind of maintain that middle class lifestyle that is so hard to keep.
And people are taking on more debt and more risk as a result of this. Is there a larger danger here, something like a bubble like we saw in real estate?
I mean, the question is really unanswered at the moment. I think there's a lot more debt than there used to be, record amounts of it. But at the same time, you know, when you talk to folks in the industry, they say that people always pay their car loans. It's the first payment they make because they need their cars to get to work. And during the financial crisis, they kept paying their car loans even after they stopped paying their mortgages. The question is, has that changed? You have a lot more auto debt, and people are sort of in these cycles of perpetual debt tied to their cars. And so when you think about it, in some ways, it's more like a long-term rental than it is a car if you're kind of never done paying for it, right? And does that change the psychology of whether people will ultimately pay if times get tough? You know, these are all questions that we don't really know the answers to, but it's something people are really watching very closely.
Seems like the financing is like a credit card in the sense that the credit card makes purchasing very easy. Shoot first and ask questions later. Get the product off the shelf and then deal with it later on. Seems like financing is providing that for consumers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's a lot more like that than it is a mortgage. A mortgage pays for a house, which is an asset that appreciates over time because you own the underlying property and that gains in value. A car loan is secured by the car. It is secured, but oftentimes the loan has a higher balance than the value of the car itself.
And that's a really good point because lenders have zeroed in on the growing popularity of extended loans. The dealers wind up making more money on the loans than on the actual cost of the car.
Yeah, this is something that you've really seen shift over time. When you think about where dealers historically made their money, it was on the margin attached to a new car. But it's become more difficult to kind of squeeze profit out of that because people know how much to pay for a car now. They can just go online and look at what the transaction price should be. So as the margins from actually selling the car have gone down on the showroom floor, they've gone up in the finance office. And when you go into the finance office, that means the finance manager who makes the loan is probably going to take some sort of cut, and they may try to sell you on insurance and other kind of add-ons that get packed into the loan. And that's really become a real profit center, the finance and insurance.
But the lenders have to really keep up with the owners, the car owners, to make sure they keep up with their payments.
So yeah, the dealer might make the loan, but they are turning that loan over to a lender, and the lender will be dedicated to servicing it. And for this story, we went inside one lender and looked at how they make sure that customers pay on time. And it's a very sophisticated operation, trying to keep people current. They deal with a lot of folks who are subprime, who struggle to make payments, and it really requires a lot of staying on top of people, making calls as soon as they're late, and kind of going through this entire operation to kind of keep people paying when it gets difficult.
And help them manage their payments, because if somebody stops paying, it's less likely that they'll be able to resume paying.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even if you can't collect a full monthly payment, they still want to collect a partial payment, because if they don't, if someone stops paying altogether, then the chances of restarting get slimmer and slimmer.
And this idea of extending loans 6 years and beyond, it was not common just a couple of years ago.
Really, over the last decade or so, you've seen the proliferation of, let's say, the seven-year car loan. These are loans of in length between 73 and 84 months. And now some loans are even longer than that. And that really stems from the need to make an unaffordable product, a $40,000 car, affordable for monthly payments. So this is how they do it.
The lure of the new car smell.
Exactly.
All right. That's Wall Street Journal reporter Ben Eisen here in our studio. Ben, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for The Wall Street Journal.